Totally Football Show. What a weekend. From Watford Wolves at Wembley, Deu Lefeu with Wolves KO, to Friday Saints Liverpool at St Mary's, where both sides looked close before that sudden dramatic breakaway. And that was just Sky Sports' pre-game presentation. We've got hot takes and opinion on all that, and a big look forward to all the midweek action in the Champions League and Europa too. It's a bumper. Totally Football Show, in association with Paddy Power. For your entertainment today, Michael Cox, author of The Mixer and the forthcoming Zonal Marking.
Hi, James.
Good morning to you, Michael. Oi, Natalie Gedra.
Oi.
From ESPN Brazil.
Your Portuguese just keeps improving, man.
Actually, it doesn't. And also Daniel Story.
Good morning.
Back from Croatia's Eternal Derby.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. What game's that?
It's Hajduk Split versus Dinamo Zagreb.
All right. I bet you've got a story to tell or two about that.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps, Michael and Natalie, if there's one fixture that you feel you have to go and see, maybe you've already seen it.
Yeah, it looks like Daniel started a new feature of the show.
We can hear that later on. You're always welcome. What a weekend, though. What are the goals of the season? One of the misses of the century over in France. Also, I think Friday, one of the goal celebrations of the season. And then Sunday afternoon, an FA Cup semi-final for the ages. Watford against Wolves. Can we just call that the final, Natalie?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It was amazing. It was so exciting. You know, there are so many things about this match that are attractive, but it's the classic case of you see Wolves. They are doing an outstanding job, but they have the investment. They have a clear plan. And you don't expect all that from Watford. And then you have to talk about Javi Gracia because he's been doing such a brilliant job. You have to really stand up for what he has been doing. And you have really interesting stories because you have Delofeu, who disappointed in Barcelona, didn't really deliver in Everton, and now he has a match like that one. And it's just, and you have Gomez, 38 years old. He's about to retire. He's been in England since 2008. And last week, ESPN did an interview with him. And it was very interesting because he said he has such a nice story, life story. He said that he decided to be a football player one day when his mom was heating up water so he could have a warm shower.
Uh-huh.
And then he decided that he was going to be a football player. And then he's all emotional now, hitting the FA Cup final. And there was this big discussion between Gomez and Foster. And I'm very happy for him. And curiosity, uh-huh, I was actually looking it up. 18th of May. So, FA Cup final. I was looking it up. Elton John scheduled a concert. I don't know what he's going to do about it, but he has a show in Copenhagen.
On the 18th of May?
Yes, exactly. Because, well, who would have guessed that Watford would come that far?
Well, actually, you know, the funny thing is, apparently we did, Guts 8 Gary, among a couple of listeners, pointing out that somebody on the show said tipped Watford for the FA Cup way back at the start of the season.
See? This person should have called Elton John. I think it would be reasonable.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's huge.
Yeah, what's he going to do about
it? I don't know.
He has to be at Wembley.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So who do we know who tips this?
I'm not sure. Was it you, Michael?
No, I'm not that clever. No.
Somebody, I have a vague recollection of somebody saying, yeah, Watford are the kind of team in this FA Cup competition. Might have been Emma, to be fair. Emma Saunders, who we'll be hearing from very, very shortly. But yeah, as you say, Natalie, all the elements here, starting, Daniel, with an incredible backdrop. I mean, the way Wembley looked, it was a classic European tifo, no?
Yeah. Well, Nick Miller, who at the game, he said on Twitter that it felt like a playoff final atmosphere. And actually, on Saturday, Man City Brighton, the Brighton fans were exactly the same. They felt like they were there for a good time. And of course, there are nerves, but not the nerves of a playoff final. So what you actually are left with is a group of supporters who have not been to Wembley for quite a long time, especially not in an FA Cup semi-final, wanting to make the most of the day. And obviously, on Sunday, the game lived up to that.
Mm, certainly did.
And in terms of the colours, worth remembering that there was a coin toss to determine who got to wear their you know, yellow, essentially, that a club representative went all the way to Wembley just to watch a coin toss and then went back
to office. Was that coin toss held?
3 weeks ago, I think.
Yeah. Oh, really?
But I mean, obviously
that's
not
planning.
I bet it was televised live on BT Sport.
I don't think it was, actually. I'm surprised it wasn't. I mean, I'm not joking. I would have watched a coin toss. I mean, the guy from Watford didn't have to go far, but someone's come all the way down from Wolverhampton just to watch a one-second event and gone back home. So just film it and just there's your proof.
Whereas the Brighton fans went along for, what, 4 minutes on Saturday? We'll talk about that game in a second. But anyway, yeah, disaster to triumph. Is this too superficial? Was it all about Gerard Deulofeu?
Yeah, it was. And Javi Gracia, I think, you know, he will come out of it with praise in that he changed the game by bringing Deulofeu wrong. I think he got it wrong by not starting him. He's been in excellent form recently.
Well, he hadn't been midweek, no?
Well, I think for an FA Cup semi-final, you pick your best attackers. Andre Gray is a worker,
right?
But he is not. He doesn't deserve a place in Watford's front three based on quality alone. And Gerard Deulofeu does. The ceiling of his potential performance is far higher than Gray's.
Right.
And it was a beautiful, beautiful finish.
Wolves 2-0 up with 11 minutes to go when he comes up with that unbelievable goal.
Yeah, it was brilliant. He's got a very particular way of kicking the ball, Deulofeu. I mean, I haven't seen it to that extent before, but that kind of flick, you know.
Yeah, it's almost like he doesn't. It's almost like he just lifts it.
Yeah, he's not kicking through the ball, is he? He's flipping it up and round. I mean, I said on this podcast last week that Deulofeu is my favourite player to watch in the Premier League. I think he's absolutely fantastic. I couldn't believe that they left him out. And I also think there was an error with the system. I don't quite know why he played the diamond. They just couldn't progress the ball. The fullbacks didn't seem to know where they were going. And obviously, bring on Deulofeu changed the game. But I think also what changed the game was Wolves took off Jota.
Right. Yes.
And they took off Neves as well. And it was like Espirito Santo hadn't considered the possibility of extra time, let alone penalties, because he then took off Moutinho. So taking off really all three of your penalty takers, not that it did go that far. But I thought, yeah, it was a game characterised by managerial errors, without wanting to sound too negative, but it was a game that kind of took on a life of its own away from the tactics, I think.
Right. As a special fan of Deulofeu, would you say this is the game of his career?
Yeah, I mean, certainly when you take into account the occasion, he's always lively. I mean, that's why he's fun to watch, because he never has a quiet game. He often has bad games where he constantly gets in positions and takes the wrong option. But he's got tremendous pace. I think his decision-making needs to be improved. But, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he moved to a really top club at the end of the season. I think if you're a manager like Unai Emery, for example, you'd bank that you could turn that player into someone who can get 15 goals a season.
I like players like that, like Deulofeu, because they are never unnoticed. And I think that shows a lot of character. You know, he always, either he's not performing well when you see that clearly, or he's pulling something off. So I think that's interesting.
Well, pulling something on was Jimenez earlier on in the game when he put on that Sin Cara wrestling mask. I obviously don't know what that means. I mean, it means without a face, like faceless.
Yes.
But it's a WWE. It's like a Mexican wrestler, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Anyway, but that was a good goal as well, no?
He's similar to his goal against Manchester United in the quarterfinal. That he's really good on the turn, Jimenez. He shoots quicker than you expect, which is exactly what happened for that second Wolves goal, in that he takes it on his chest and spins really quickly for... He's quite a big guy, Jimenez, but obviously his permanent move confirmed last week, and he is a bargain at 30 million.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. But not enough to see Wolves pass Watford, who, as we mentioned, gets through to the FA Cup final for just the second time in their history and their first since 1984. What a day for Hornets supporters. And amongst them, of course, friend of the pod, Emma Saunders, who was there.
It's a huge thing historically for the club. But when you reflect on the season as a whole, it just seems like Watford have really stepped into a completely different era now. It was one thing going up into the Premier League and not going straight back down as they have done the two previous times recently. It does seem as if we've really sort of stabilised in that sense, and we are here to stay in the Premier League. But it just feels like we've turned it up a notch now, and we are serious about finishing in the top 10 and even more so pushing on for European football. Realistically, we're not going to be chasing a Premier League title just yet. So in that sense, it's the FA Cup that you really dare to dream for, because that's the closest we're going to get, really. So to think now we are just potentially 90 minutes away from lifting a trophy, it really is a dream come true. And for Javi Gracia, there's been so many comparisons drawn between him and Graham Taylor, just the way that he conducts himself and what he's achieved at the club. So it's just so fitting that he's managed to take us as far as Graham Taylor has, in that he's confirmed our spot in the FA Cup final. It's really quite the achievement, and it just highlights what an extraordinary job that Javi Gracia has done.
Emma Saunders. Now, did you see Troy Deeney's interview with Carrie Brown post-game on beIN
Sports?
We
were talking about it before,
All right, what were you saying?
It was very entertaining, actually. It was funny how he expressed himself. Troy Deeney is a very interesting character. And he's not the most technical player, but he shows a lot of spirit. And
I think is the expression.
Yes, exactly, in Spanish. And I think that kind of represents a bit of Watford in terms of, like, Wolves is very technical team with very skillful players, and Watford is more of a heart and spirit team. That's basically how I see the differences.
Mm. Well, Troy's certainly quite vocal in his attribution of their success to the attributes. Post-game, anyway, he wasn't talking about that kind of thing. He was saying basically, I mean, it's one of those kind of quite frank interviews about the troubles that he's been through and what it means to be at this moment, and the fact that he was so emotional at the final whistle. As he says, you know, everybody knows I'm a big tough guy, but yeah, I don't mind showing it. And he says, you know, everyone goes back to the prison stories, but it goes way beyond that. It goes back to when I was a kid, and, you know, the tough times you get through. And Carrie Brown, it's a great interview. She says, so for anyone who's struggling maybe with their career and thinking about whether they should continue, what would your words be to them? And he says, I don't want to talk about just football. I want to go a bit deeper than that. Basically, anybody, you see all these other people with their Instagram lives. Don't believe in all that stuff. Everyone's got problems. Everyone's got bills to pay. Everyone has heartache. You know, don't give up. He's a frustrating character because he does have some fabulous interviews sometimes, but then he acts like a complete dork on others.
Well, I think he's just himself, isn't he?
Yes.
And I think if we're going to ask anything from footballers, it would be that they are just themselves. There's no
some
facade
of them, like,
there.
Them not being. Anyway, Watford celebrating then, but they've still got at least 90 minutes against the awesome Man City to come. City, of course, beating Brighton 1-0 on Saturday. We'll talk about what City's week looks like after this.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
City taking on Brighton Saturday at Wembley. City have almost lost count of the number of trophies they're still in, but they're through to the final here after that fourth-minute goal from Gabriel Jesus. Game over inside 4 minutes, that fair?
Yeah, I mean, City were, you know, they scored a brilliant goal, but then they did what they've done plenty of times this season, which is kind of take their foot off the gas. I actually think Guardiola will be really annoyed with the performance because he picked a really strong team, and they've got Spurs in the Champions League this week, so I think he would have liked them to get a lead and then, as they've done for most of the last 3 months, get two or three goals up and then coast through the last 45 minutes, even longer in some games. And they didn't do that, partly credit to Brighton, but also because City were just quite sloppy after the first 20 minutes.
Yeah, they're going to have a very intense month of April, so you have to take that into account. But it was kind of disappointing as you were watching the match, because you see a goal happening with 4 minutes and then you go, okay, so that's gone. Second half was a little bit better. Brighton tried more. They attacked more because first half they were very concerned about just defending. Brighton fans were really, really happy and loud and at Wembley. City fans, not so much. So yeah, it's going to be an interesting month of April for City.
Brighton's heads didn't go down, unlike their players, Daniel. I saw you were calling them out, calling them dirty diving cheats on Twitter.
They were divers. They were. They really were. I mean, Yahan Bahsh dived, I think, three times, and slightly ironically, the one time Kyle Walker would probably have been sent off. I think his reaction, if he falls backwards and holds his head, then I think Walker probably gets sent off. It's one of those where the reaction quite often determines the punishment. But he dived three times. Knockhart dived at least twice, including for a penalty at the end, which was, I mean, it was ludicrous on the replay. He just, that kind of arms above the head and goes down through no touch at all. It's just a bit, I mean, maybe it's a, you know, I've got a Brighton fan David Hartchick, a mate of mine, and he says it kind of becomes an almost valid tactic now in that so many teams do it and you think, well, why not?
But if it's against City as well, does that give you kind of carte blanche to do anything?
Martin Keown on commentary, I heard watching the highlights back, kind of praise Brighton for being clever. And you think, well, you can't have a go at players when they dive and then just because it's a smaller team say, oh, that's clever. But I don't know.
I think it's so interesting, the diving discussion here in England, because in South America in general, in Brazil as well, it's so normal to dive and people take it as part of the game. And here is a big discussion. So I'm always interested.
There's no kind of moral backlash against that. None whatsoever.
No, it's normal. It's part of the game, especially in Libertadores. Especially.
Right, okay.
Yes, it's part of the tournament. And I think it's very interesting. Every Brazilian that's here, and they always get amazed with how much attention diving gets.
Right.
I understand today. Today I understand. But when I got here in England, I was like, well, but that's just diving, you know?
What else bewildered you when you first arrived here that now you feel you've got a handle on?
Oh, God, that's a tough one, James.
All right, we'll come back to that one.
Okay.
It should be said that there was VAR at Wembley, so there was absolutely no point diving because had a penalty been awarded, for example, for the knockout dive, then it would have immediately been ruled out anyway. So. Mm.
City, anyway, still on for the cure. They've already won the League Cup. In the league, Liverpool have meantime gone back in front. We'll talk about that later on. But Tuesday, City will switch to another of this spinning plates with their Champions League quarter final against Spurs. City on a 14-game winning streak. Or are they, Michael?
I think they are, yeah.
No, because it's the penalties against Chelsea. I've included that in there.
Was that on penalties? Oh, yeah, it was, yeah. Okay, so it's not.
But still, I mean, that aside, that cavil aside, just looking amazing at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, over the 14 games...
I know we've just said they didn't look amazing against Brighton.
Yeah.
But broadly, when they want to, it looks like they can unleash shock and awe.
Yeah. I mean, my concern for them ahead of Tottenham would be that they've played three games against Cardiff, Fulham and Brighton, who must be the three most passive teams in the Premier League in terms of closing down the opposition. And it's not great preparation. It's good in terms of fitness. But I can see Tottenham shocking them in the first 10, 15 minutes if they have a big early burst of pressure.
Interesting.
Because City have just been able to... I mean, this semi-final, they could just walk the ball from the back, from the edge of their own box into the final third, and there's no pressure whatsoever. That's a completely different situation from playing against Spurs.
Absolutely. Is Lloris going to be the key player in this game?
It would be nice if he makes it through a big game without making a ricket, yes.
But he can be outstanding. And he can also be decisive in a negative sense.
Yeah, but then I think he's one of those ties where pretty much every single Spurs player is going to have to step up. They do have problems at the moment. I think Kane, every game that Kane plays and plays well, he becomes Spurs' most important player in terms of holding up the ball, in terms of the one-touch passing that enables them to counter City even when City do really push forward on them. But I agree with Michael. I think if in the new stadium, if Tottenham can have a big first 10 minutes, then almost like they did against Barcelona, they kind of believe they're bigger than they are and they can trouble City.
OK, it's North London's newest landmark. Natalie, you've been there, the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. What's it like compared to... Is it a massive step up compared
to... Yes, it is. It's a different level. I was talking about it because you get used to these FIFA standards in stadiums. They are very nice, but they kind of have the same idea around it. And in Spurs, I think it's different. It's a new design. It has more character. It's not just one modern stadium.
It's not
one
a
other
generic.
No, it's not.
What was the thing that most impressed you then about your trip there?
The design. Design of the stadium, because it's so beautiful on the inside and on the outside, and the way they put the ceilings with the glass ceilings, it's lovely. It's very impressive. And I was interviewing City players after the FA Cup semi-final, and they all spoke about the stadium as a factor in this match, that Tottenham players are going to be extra motivated because of the stadium. So I think the stadium's going to play a big part in this match.
They've met so many times already. Do they approach this in the same way they would a Premier League game?
I think Spurs will feel the pressure. If this was a home game in the Premier League, I think they would probably accept a draw as a very good result, whereas Pochettino might well take it at full time, but a draw is difficult when you consider Manchester City's dominant home form and Spurs' troubles on the road in the last few months. So
Well,
I think if the game
in general,
well, yeah, but if they go in
five, four defeats,
I think what will be interesting is if it goes in, let's say, 0-0 with 20 minutes to go, what then happens? Does Pochettino think, right, we really need a goal here because we are likely to lose away from home? And does Guardiola think we're pretty happy with 0-0? That will be really interesting.
Are you not anticipating a particularly thrilling encounter then?
I think it will be a really good watch because I think these are two of the most attractive teams in world football to watch if they play well. And particularly against each other, the games have been great. I don't think there'll be a huge number of goals in it.
It's never been easier to mess things up. Whether you're confusing vegans with dairy intolerance, offering your seat to a pregnant lady who isn't pregnant, or, like Liverpool, chucking away a 7-point lead at the top of the Premier League in a matter of weeks. Good one, lads. That's why Paddy Power do money-back specials, so not all mistakes cost you as much. Paddy Power, home of the money-back special. Applies to first bet on all losing goal scorer, correct scorer and what odds. Paddy bets on the match. Max refund £10. T's and C's apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
On Spotify, smart speaker and podcast platforms everywhere, this is the Totally Football Show from Muddy Knees Media.
Well, as mentioned, while City busy themselves with the FA Cup and Champions League, Premier League has seen the 25th change of lead since the start of this season. Liverpool on Friday night coming from behind against Saints with a very dramatic finale. If they win the title, Liverpool, in the DVD, they'll just play that 15 minutes out in real time, I reckon, no?
You know, I was watching Salah's goal and I think the goal represents much of what we expect from Liverpool. Intensity, pace, and talent, individuality, because they have very good individual players that that you could see clearly on the past season, and this season you can't see it as much as you used to. And when I saw that Salah go, brilliant finish.
Were you shouting
amazing
at the screen? Hands up, who was shouting at the screen when he went through?
Yes,
well, Michael wasn't. I was.
I was shouting at the screen a little bit beforehand because it was so obvious a break was going to come from that. You know, when the ball came back to Ward-Prowse, reminded me of a goal Arsenal conceded to Liverpool at the start of last season, where the ball came back to Bellerin, I think, and he tried to control it and they broke. I think in England, players clear the ball too much on the edge of their own box. But I think when they're the last man getting the ball after a corner, just get rid of it. Honestly, just hoof it into the stands. I thought it was a really preventable goal from Southampton. Sorry to be negative.
No, that's fine. But anyway, so they race downfield and you're just thinking Salah, who for the last 8 weeks has had this narrative of the fact that he's desperate to score.
Yes.
He never passes when he
Nine
should.
Matches.
He's wasted so many opportunities.
And you see Firmino running and you're just thinking, give the ball to Firmino, give the ball to... And you see the two defenders coming towards Salah and he just...
Brilliant finish. Because against behind all of this, time is ticking away. They've equalised after Shane Long's opener, Naby Keita with the goal there. But it just feels like the spell is lifting for Liverpool, that a draw will see this kind of momentum drying up for them.
Yeah, this is the kind of big question for the rest of the season, is that City are coasting to wins, Liverpool are fighting for theirs, and kind of the logical assumption would be that you would much rather coast than fight, because eventually if you have to fight, you'll come unstuck. But actually for Liverpool, it's almost the opposite, because there are so many questions about their mentality, particularly after 2013-14, when they were this kind of fancy team but then came a cropper in the final weeks. It's almost good for them to have to fight, because it reproves to themselves over and over again. You saw Henderson screaming at the end of the game. He's the only one in that team now, starting 11, who was still there in 2013-14. So it's that sense of we're still proving it. We can do this. So actually, I think that the tight games are almost a good thing for Liverpool.
Yeah, the emotion of that celebration from Henderson and then from the rest of the team as they join him was absolutely extraordinary.
I mean, fair play to Henderson as well, because he is the captain. He's not an automatic starter. He came off the bench, assists a goal, scores a goal, and then rallies a crowd and goes absolutely mad. And that's that becomes a defining image of the weekend.
Yeah.
And Milner and Henderson, they really changed the pace of Liverpool's midfield on second half. They really made an impact.
Okay, because I must admit, I completely that escape. What did Milner do?
No, Milner was brilliant. When he entered he just brought new ideas to Liverpool's midfield. And Henderson brought this new, very exciting pace. Mm. So it was a very big impact.
It's funny, Henderson, because we obviously see him, particularly with England, as a kind of deep-lying midfielder. But actually, if he pushes up a bit more, he scores and creates more goals than Liverpool players who play a little bit higher up the pitch. You know, Gini Wijnaldum, for example, and certainly Naby Keita when he's played. So it's interesting that he kind of plays a different role for Liverpool, and he enjoys having that freedom to get forward. He really does. He likes to see himself as this Gerrard figure of herring up the pitch and herring back again rather than just sitting. And he did it brilliantly against Southampton.
Mm. And Liverpool, 3 goals. They only had 5 shots on target. A little bit harsh on Saints, the game, because they started so well in this match, and they're still not safe, of course, but you have to salute Liverpool for their spirit. It's that's the 19th and 20th goal they've scored, the Salah and Henderson strikes, in the last 15 minutes of games this season. They've also won 16 points from losing positions, both of which are kind of league-topping statistics.
Yeah, I'm surprised about how many points they've won from losing positions because they haven't conceded many goals.
Hmm.
That's the end of that point.
Well, next up for Liverpool, Porto, who drew 0-0 at Anfield last year, but only after they'd lost 5-0 at home in the first leg. This Liverpool side certainly seemed to be on another level to last year's edition. What about Porto? Well, they're currently right behind Benfica on goal difference. They've won 4 games in a row. They've got lots of old faces that you'll know, like, Pepe, Casillas, Maxi Pereira. Musa Marega's been outstanding for them so far this season. 6 goals and 2 assists in the Champions League. And then there's this the Brazilian centre-back, yes. Militao, who yes. Real Madrid have just splashed,
yes.
What?
Exactly.
Spaffed. 50 million on?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, how good is he, Natalie?
Yeah, there are lots of expectations regarding Militão. He's been called up for the national teams a few times, but he's been called up as a right back, but he's been playing as a defender as well. In Porto, he's been playing in both positions, but he's very young. He's only 21. He's very promising, a very promising player. You have Alex Telles as well, the left back, another Brazilian in Porto. He's really good. He got called up for the national team for the first time after Felipe Luiz's injury, and he did pretty well. But most of the expectations are around Militão because he's a very promising player.
Porto narrowly struggled past Roma at 4-3 on aggregate in the last 16, but he looked really good before that in an admittedly not super tough group of the Champions League. But Liverpool, big favourites, especially after what happened between these two clubs last year. The other Champions League quarterfinals this week, well, Barcelona will be visiting Man United. Barcelona fresh from a big win over Atletico Madrid, 2-0. Admittedly, Atletico were down to 10 men from 28 minutes in after Diego Costa saw red. You're laughing because you've seen the quotes.
Yes, I have.
I'm not reading this out.
Fair enough.
It's so rude what he said to the referee.
It's a family podcast. Don't do that.
Really is. I mean, I know you can swear again. But
was it mother or grandmother?
I haven't seen it as... He implies that the referee's mother is on the game and enjoys what I think is known in kind of those circles as tarmacking.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think an early shower, and I hope he's washed his mouth out as well. Oblak valiantly held on until the 85th minute with the scoreline 0-0 before Suarez lashed in 1 goal. And then, of course, Leo Messi came up with another. What do you think when you picture Jones, say, and Smalling facing those two, Michael?
Yeah, I do worry for United. I think they're obviously the first two players they've got to stop. And the third one is Jordi Alba, who again was excellent. The timing of his runs is so good from left back. I think that's the most interesting area for me because in the first few weeks, Solskjaer was very bold with his wide players. And if you look at the way they played against Tottenham and the way they played against Arsenal when they won both games, they basically put Rashford out there to attack in behind. And that, I think, is what Solskjaer would have done if they played Barcelona 2 months ago. Now, with United looking quite frail at the back, I think they'll be more defensive, probably put Lingard out there against him. But yeah, Messi's just, I mean, from that kind of number 10 inside right position, he's almost reinvented himself again. Because he hasn't played as a number 10 really until the last couple of years for Barcelona. And I don't think that Matic has the mobility to cope with him. So I think Barcelona are very strong favourites. Mm.
Man United coming into this game after 3 defeats in the last 4 matches at Old Trafford, conceding twice in each of those defeats. Solskjaer talking about the players looking like they're on holiday. Of course they'll be up for this one, but in the search for positives for United coming into this, Natalie, what have you got?
Yeah, they already produced a miracle against PSG United.
Man United, that's what they do.
Yes, exactly. But can you expect the same against Barcelona?
Well, they did it against Juve earlier in the season.
The only glimmer of positivity is that Solskjaer United have been better without the ball. They have been, their big problem against kind of Watford at home, even though they won, was that they just look out of ideas as soon as they were asked to attack a team, and they won't have as much of the ball against Barcelona.
What about Paul Pogba? What's happened to him? Because quietly amid this Man United slump, I know we've looked at various things that might be happening in terms of their fitness, but his form has absolutely dropped off, and it looks like Solskjaer, is he now experiencing the same difficulties about where to play Pogba that dogged his predecessor?
I don't know if it's quite as macro level as that. I think when I watch Paul Pogba, if the first 5 minutes of the game goes right and he plays a couple of nice passes, he holds up an opponent or he creates a chance, the rest of the game seems to go well. If he struggles in the first 5 minutes, exactly the same as Lukaku. If the first touch is off or a pass is misplaced in the first 2 or 3 minutes, it really seems to get him down. Mm. And United's job, if he is going to stay this summer, is to kind of realise that, yeah, he will make mistakes, but he's almost playing like a 19-year-old again, where he really gets to him, and he needs to be a bit more mature than
that. How old is he?
26, so he...
What?
Yeah, he needs to be more mature 26? Than this.
Cheapers. I would have said 20... Anyway, it doesn't matter what I would have said. But it's funny, because he was such a stick that people beat Mourinho over the head with, but just one assist and no goals in his last 6 Premier League games.
Yeah, he was absolutely brilliant before that, it should be said. And, you know, that stick was used to beat Mourinho deservedly, because I think he actively eroded Paul Pogba's confidence and contentment at Manchester United, and it is only 3 months since that stopped happening. So if he stays next season, he might well be a completely different player after full pre-season, no World Cup, etc., etc. But yeah, they need more from him.
Well, United fans will want us to point out that Barcelona have been knocked out at the quarterfinal stage for the last 3 seasons, and they haven't actually won an away knockout tie since February 2016. When they beat Arsenal.
Yeah, they've often been bad away from home in the knockout stages. Even under
Roma last year.
Yeah, I mean, even going back to the Guardiola days, I think Guardiola only won one away knockout tie with Barcelona.
Is Rashford going to be fit?
Yeah, Michael alluded to the tactics kind of thing. When Solskjaer started and it was going really well, they played this kind of split striker thing where Rashford and Lukaku normally kind of started as a front pair, but basically went wide as they could. And then someone pushed through the middle, Lingard or Mata. I think Mata started as like a false nine, basically, against PSG at home before going off. Mm. With Jordi Alba running forward, that's a heck of a risk for Rashford to play that role this time.
I mean, they do have speed. That's the one thing United have over Barcelona. They've got more attacking speed, I think. Not that Barcelona is slow, but if United play Rashford, Martial, Lingard, that's a good counter-attacking three.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show, sponsors of Melchester Rovers. Find out more at RoyTheRoversOfficial.com.
You, a Premier League supporter, those Premier League sides look like having pretty good fixtures. Me, an intellectual, actually, Ajax Juve is the tie of the round. I'm right, aren't I, Michael?
Yeah, I'm most excited about this one. I've got to say, it's interesting in terms of the current sides, but also historically, they're kind of two clubs who epitomise opposite ends of the footballing philosophy, I guess.
Yeah, that's exactly what I've written down here.
Excellent.
Well, I mean, more or less. That kind of youth, the guile, the kind of technical against the tactical, all that. And you actually made your way over to Turin for Juve's victory over the comeback win over Atletico Madrid in the last 16.
Yeah, it was my first time at Juventus Stadium, and I was really, really impressed with it. And I'm really impressed with Juventus, because I think Atletico are the team in Europe who I'd fancy to go away from home and keep a clean sheet, but they were just never in the game. And, with Ronaldo and Mandzukic, I think there's a kind of old school physical threat there, combined with the technical ability as well. I mean, Mandzukic's ability to just provide knockdowns and flick-ons is just so useful. Mm. And then you've got Ronaldo, so having to cope with both of them.
Yeah, that's the thing, because of course he's been out.
Yeah, I think he's going to be fit.
They're making very optimistic noises now about his return.
Yes, they are.
They certainly managed to beat Milan without him. And a great, if you've been following Juve of late with the whole Moise Kean business and Bonucci's dunderheaded comments afterwards, fantastic kind of narrative to this game, with Bonucci's error actually setting up Milan for the opening goal away in Turin, and Kean rescuing then his senior player with that late strike, which means that he's scored 5 goals in 5 now, a goal every 51 minutes in 2019. I don't know if he'll start. I think Allegri thinks he's so valuable coming off the bench. But as you say, Natalie, Cristiano should start, you think?
I think so. Mm. I think so. I find it very hard to believe that even if he's not 100% fit, he will stay on the bench. He would be like, okay, Allegri, I'm fine here.
No, right.
No, and it's the type of match that he likes, and he...
That they bought him for,
yes,
as well.
Yes, exactly.
The other major thing is whether Chiellini comes back. So we talk about Bonucci's error setting up Milan at the start of that game. He hasn't looked great, and particularly when Chiellini's not in the side. So him coming back into the team could be huge, because Ajax can score a goal.
Yes, they're a very fast team. They have a very clear idea of what the club's mentality is like, and they want to deliver in this sense as well. They have young players, they have talent, so they've been very motivated in this Champions League. They have a very good Brazilian, David Neres. He's very talented. So yeah, it's going to be good.
All right, they scored their 100th goal in the Eredivisie this season at the weekend. Why are you laughing? Because Eredivisie? Or?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay, well, they beat Willem II 4-1. At the weekend.
But they probably won't actually play a striker up against those centre-backs, Ajax. I mean, the way they played at the Bernabeu with Tadic as a false nine produced possibly the best performance I've seen this season. So I expect they'll do the same again.
This is a kind of match of or tie of a generation for Ajax. You know, this goes right back to Johan Cruyff. You know, him establishing with Wim Jonk the kind of new Ajax DNA to follow his old ideals, and then Cruyff obviously tragically passing away and Ajax having to do it without him and Jonk doing it without him. And it was kind of all for this. So it is, when we talk about the history, it really does kind of reflect back to that history. It is an absolutely brilliant tie.
Rest of the Premier League this weekend. Standout game was Everton-Arsenal on Sunday afternoon. Mark was on a 5.5-hour flight to the Red Sea while this game was taking place. He'd like to know, how good were Everton in his absence?
Very good. Very good. If you look at the shots, look at the stats of the match, Everton had 23 shots and Arsenal 7. So you can't have Arsenal with only 7 shots. They're really poor on first half. Really poor. And regarding Everton, Bernard's been great. Brings a different pace. He's very fast and creative. And in Brazil, he's well known as... there's this commentator in Brazil who always used to mention him as joy in the legs. Yes,
How do you say that in Portuguese?
Alegria nas pernas. Yeah. Repeat with me.
Alegria nas pernas.
Yeah, really good. Good, good. No, Bernardo's been
just
brilliant.
Just about the right amount of patronising there. I liked it.
Really? And same to you, Daniel.
Thank you.
Anyway.
No, but regarding Arsenal, what really caught my attention is their form away from home. Mm. 5 wins, 4 draws, 5 losses this Premier League. But if you look at their final fixtures, they have Watford away.
Yep.
They have Wolves away. Mm-hmm. They have Leicester away. And they have Burnley away. So they really need to improve their away form. Otherwise,
of the last 6 away from home. And they've lost, here's a different stat, but similar message, 7 of their last 11 away in all competitions. And now they've got the Drake curse as well. What about Mesut Ozil? I'm getting a bit dizzy trying to work out if he's a misunderstood genius or not. What did this match say about him?
I don't think he had a great game. I think there was a little bit more onus on him to drop deep and create because Arsenal without both Torreira and Xhaka.
Right.
And I think that really showed. I mean, Guendouzi and Elneny really didn't get the ball into dangerous zones. I thought Arsenal's passing was as bad as it's been all season.
Okay. What about his this scene at the end? Did you see when he's on the bench? He's looking furious. Who did he throw his jacket at? Was it at Marco Silva, or has been more widely interpreted against his own manager?
Oh, I thought it was more at Silva.
Was it?
But I don't know.
Yeah,
I think so.
Okay.
It's funny with Ozil that people want him to be more expressive and demonstrably passionate, and then when he does it, everyone goes, that's not really him, is it?
But there is a grey area in between.
Yes, there is. But I think he was just frustrated. He played poorly and Arsenal played poorly.
It was a nice moment for Phil Jagielka as well, who, I must say, I only turned this game on about 2 minutes before it started. When I heard his name, I wasn't sure whether he was in the studio as a pundit or still on the pitch, because I had Tim Cahill. I thought, oh, Cahill and Jagielka. And he looked, for the first 5 minutes, he looked really badly exposed. But then popped up with a winner from a Luca Dean throw, which consistently caused Arsenal problems. Even before the goal, Dean just lofted one of those in, and it was like Arsenal being back at Stoke against Rory Delap.
Do you remember Rory Delap, Natalie?
No, please.
Can you explain Rory Delap to Natalie? Because this is a very...
He was described by Luis Felipe Scolari as
okay.
one of the most incredible things I've ever seen in football.
Oh.
So he had the longest throw you've probably ever seen.
Right.
And when Scolari's Chelsea went away to Stoke, they spent all week preparing for this long throw, but basically couldn't because they couldn't replicate the long throw.
Yeah. He was as indicative of a certain kind of English footballness as, say, do you remember that player who used to dribble by bouncing the ball on his head?
Oh, Kerlon.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Kerlon, yeah.
Oh, yes, Kerlon. Oh, my God.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
And that was the kind of thing we'd see and go, in Brazil. I just wondered if in Brazil they used to show shots of Roy Delap and go, wow.
I mean, to the extent that Stoke City used to have a changeover of dry towels on the touchline so he could dry the ball to get it in the box. I mean, that's pronounced a tactic.
There's one of my favourite moments in Premier League history, I'd say, was when it was West Brom against Stoke, I think, and the ball was going out for a throw, and the goalkeeper Boz Mayhill rushed across to prevent it going out for a throw. Booted it out for a corner and was just happy to defend the corner instead.
Less dangerous than Roy Delap.
Yeah.
Superb. All right. Well, anyway, next up for Arsenal, they are at home, but it is against Napoli, which is going to be an interesting tie in the Europa League. I'm not sure what to make of it. Michael, do you have any thoughts?
I'd make Napoli slight favourites over the two legs, I think. I think the second leg being in Naples is a big deal, especially with Arsenal's a bad away form, as we've discussed.
Mm.
So I think Arsenal would probably like a lead to take to Naples here.
Okay. They're not in the best of... In terms of results, Napoli have been a little bit patchy. Well, they lost at the weekend against Empoli and then they drew with Genoa midweek. And it wasn't like they were resting players either. Everybody was there, Milic, etc. But they've got Insigne coming back in and Goulam as well, potentially, which will be huge. They've only got 2 wins in their last 9 European away games, Napoli.
Is it too much of a generalisation for me to say that I wouldn't read too much into their form, considering they don't have much to play
for? No, I think that's absolutely right. And that's, certainly the Gazzetta today was saying basically they're already in the cup. I mean, mentally, they've just been thinking about this game, which can be a positive thing and sometimes not. But yeah, you'd make Napoli slight favourites.
Slight favourites, yeah. The second leg being in Naples is big.
Difficult place to go.
Definitely.
Mm. The other Europa League tie sees Slavia Praha taking on Chelsea, who are in action this Monday evening at home to West Ham. Let's bish-bash and indeed bosh through the other 3 Premier League games this weekend. Palace beating Newcastle 1-0. 10th penalty of the season from Milivojevic. You've got a stat, haven't you?
That accounts for 13% of all the penalties scored in the Premier League this season.
That's amazing.
He's also now only 3 off the Premier League record in a season, which is obviously Palace player as well, Andy Johnson.
Oh, yeah.
Who... Andy Johnson also assisted most of those penalties with some diving that Natalie would and her compatriots would be bang on board with. But it is a kind of legitimate tactic now for Palace. They give the ball to Wilfried Zaha. They tell him to get in the penalty area, to keep the ball at his feet, run around and wait for someone stupid like DeAndre Yedlin to dive in and make a rash challenge.
Well, the good one with this is he could have gone down for the first one. Was like, this is outside the box, not having that. Wait until he went inside and Yedlin got involved. Fantastic.
Superb. Ending Newcastle's 5-game winning run at home. Leicester got their 4th straight win away at Huddersfield. Another goal from the excellent Youri Tielemans, who's either scored or assisted in 5 of his last 6 Premier League games. Bournemouth, meanwhile, managed to lose at home to Burnley.
3-1.
Of course, there were 2 goals in 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And then who got the 3rd for Burnley?
Barnes.
All right, okay. Who'd first actually player. Opened the scoring for Bournemouth with his own goal.
Yeah, first player in the history of Burnley to score in the same match a goal and an own goal.
Oh, right, excellent. The 3 points moving Burnley to 8 points above the bottom 3, so they look safe now. Brighton and Southampton both within 5 points of Cardiff. Brighton, though, with a game in hand. All right, then.
Can I say that I'm curious to see who's going to finish 7th? I don't know
seventh.
If that's... Yeah, I don't know how bizarre is that because we already know the top 6.
Mm-hmm.
But between 7 and 10, it's pretty intense there. You have Leicester, Wolves, Everton and Watford all like 1 point difference. Mm. So, and they're all showing some exciting moments.
Well,
here,
you're right.
They've probably got 4 managers who might actually... appreciate getting into the Europa League rather than kind of like Burnley this season where Dyche basically and understandably tried to engineer their way out of it.
Right.
You've got 4 managers who probably, their clubs will want European football, so the managers will as well.
Well, if you think that's interesting, Natalie, wait till you hear about Daniel's trip to the Eternal Derby. We'll be moving on to that and all sorts of other excitements from abroad and also the Championship in the next part of this Totally Football Show. Michael, there was something you wanted to say about the race for seventh.
I think it's worth pointing out that Watford have to win the FA Cup final to get a European place. Back in the day, until about 5 years ago, if you qualified for the FA Cup final and lost, and the team who won it were already in the Champions League,
right, you'd get the
So, for example, Stoke in 2011, but that's not the case. So you probably will get a European slot for finishing seventh.
I see. Daniel, you made a trip to see Hajduk Split.
Hajduk Split,
Hajduk
yes.
Split against
Dinamo Zagreb.
Dinamo Zagreb, yes. Yeah. Okay, what happened? Why did you want to go and see this?
It's called Croatia's Eternal Derby. Those two clubs were, before 1992, were with Red Star and Partizan as kind of the big four of Yugoslav football. And after independence, that became, you know, the Croatian derby. And it was on my football bucket list. Mm. Split is an amazing city, but it's a city that kind of feels like it used to be subservient to Belgrade and now it feels subservient to Zagreb. They feel very bitter that they pay the taxes and the money all gets spent in Zagreb. So there is a huge rivalry there. Often unpleasant. There's not a competitive rivalry as much anymore. Dynamo are 17 points clear at the top of the league. But it's a brilliant game to go to.
All right. So what happened when you went?
Well, I went for the atmosphere and that was amazing. You know, flares, fires, etc., etc. The Torcida, who is the Split supporters club, and who are named after a Brazilian... So a group of supporters went to watch the 1950 World Cup in Brazil.
Oh, which is where they got, from? Yeah, the got national side from. As well have this Torcida, or Torcida as they say,
Torcida.
Which is a Portuguese word.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
So they got their name from going to the 1950 World Cup in Brazil.
Brilliant.
But yes, I went. Dinamo won the game 1-0. Standard red card for an elbow in a derby. But yeah, I went for the atmosphere.
And lots of fires got lit in the stands.
Indeed.
Brilliant.
Yep.
Excellent. Okay, where are you going next?
Old Trafford on Wednesday.
All right, yeah, but no, I mean, all that ilk.
nothing before the 21 Giros, that's the next.
Mm. What have you got, Michael, I asked the question earlier, if you could pick one fixture that you want to... I suppose you've been to them all, haven't you?
No, not really. It's a boring answer, but I haven't been to Barcelona or Real Madrid, I think that's...
Right. What about Boca River? What about you, Natalie?
I haven't been to Celtic Rangers.
Right. There's enough of them. I mean, they happen more or less every week.
Yeah.
So you've got no one but yourself to blame for that.
Yeah, I know that. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, in my defence, I'm always working.
That's true.
Yeah. It is a football game. I reckon you could sell it to ESPN Brazil.
Yeah,
I'm going to have a talk with them.
Okay. In France, when the Seagulls follow the trawler asks, is the Chupa Moting miss on Sunday the worst ever?
Yeah.
Okay, because, hard to argue.
Well, it's from such close range that they need VAR to see whether it had gone in or not. So that solves the question. He was under...
So,
I mean, some
it was going in.
Yes, it was going in.
Basically, he's shot and it's going across the line. And what does he want to do? Just make it his own goal?
No, I think he's in two minds... Well, I think he's in two minds about whether to steal the goal or not.
Right.
And I think he gets caught in two minds.
He backheels it out of the goal, basically.
It's so... But, I mean, it's as bad a miss as you ever see. It's awful.
And it meant that the PSG only drew. To be fair to Choupo-Moting, he had actually opened the scoring.
No. Not to be fair to him. You don't get one goal to rule out that.
Okay.
He has to score 30 next season, and then we can have a to be fair to him.
Right. Anyway, so they ended up drawing that one, PSG, and they haven't mathematically won the title. So there's still a large amount of tension about that. What a piece of magic, or what an extended stretch of magic for Ben Arfa for Rennes against Angers.
I think I might be goal of the season.
It is an amazing... Have you seen this?
That was so good.
Yeah. It's like the ball is glued to his feet.
Yeah, and because when I saw it, I assumed that, you know, I just thought, this is incredible from Ben Arfa. I thought it was going to just be the assist.
Right.
But then he goes into the box and finishes it, having beaten about five players.
Yeah, he's beaten them twice as well. He evades something like 13 or 14 tackles. He goes past them and then he decides it was fun, so he goes back and does it again.
He is that player, though. He's one of those players that when he's in little moments, he's like he's playing on a different level on a computer game. He's just taking the mick out of... I remember he scored a goal for Newcastle against Bolton in the Premier League. It might have even been the FA Cup that was the same, just slaloming past players. He's so good at that.
Hands up, who saw De Clasica on Saturday?
Yes.
Michael, that's good. Okay, so Rafa was explaining how important this was, how tight it was, Dortmund looking like some narrow favourites ahead of the game. How did it go?
5-0 to Bayern. And
wow.
To be honest, aside from the fact that Dortmund hit the post within the first 5 minutes, I mean, it could have been 7 or 8. It was almost difficult to watch, actually, because it was... you know, really inexperienced, really young Dortmund backline just getting absolutely battered by Müller and Lewandowski. And I mean, they couldn't deal with set pieces. They were being pressed high up the pitch. Just in every aspect of the game, Bayern was superior. And it's just incredible that, you know, Dortmund have been top before this game. I mean, that would not just the 3 points and the 5-0 loss, but psychologically that would be so difficult to recover from.
Dortmund, who were 9 points clear of Bayern at Christmas time, now behind them. Bayern had 20 shots, Dortmund just 2, and Lewandowski made it to 201 goals in 288 games in the Bundesliga.
Just see the kind of psychology of having a young team in the first half of the season where it's all exciting, it's taking the most of opportunities, it's everyone, you know, seizing things, to having a young team in the second half of the season where they looked so frightened, didn't they? They looked just horrendous. Mm.
The player I was really impressed with, if I could just add, was Thiago, who I think, but for injuries, might be the best midfielder in the world by now. He's just so good. Everything about him is brilliant. But the thing I particularly like is a little bit like De La Feu. He's got a really weird way of kicking the ball where he almost like pivots his foot and slices through it. And he just pinged in three or four really good corners that Dortmund couldn't deal with. And one of them brought the opener for Hummels.
Bayern now 1 point ahead with six games to go. So, still wide open. In MLS, DC United hosted Los Angeles FC. Ooh, Daniel.
Wayne Rooney's tackle.
Oh, yeah.
So to speak. Mm-hmm. Horrific. I mean, a genuinely horrible leg-breaking challenge. And sometimes those challenges are out of, you know, youthful exuberance. But
right.
I think he knows what he was doing.
Oh, you think he did?
He just died. I mean, it is a leg-breaker.
I just thought he was a little bit slower. His body was a little bit slower than his mind thought
I always think when the foot makes contact with a part of the leg that was never anywhere near the ball.
Yeah.
It wasn't like he caught a trailing leg after a pass. It was the standing leg.
Right.
It was horrendous.
Right. This is on Diego Rossi. DC, to be fair, were already 3-0 down at this point. It ended up being 4-0 to LAFC.
And that is a Wayne Rooney sending off 3-0 down in a big, big game and loses his temper and gets frustrated and dives in.
We talked about Italy and Spain. As we mentioned, Barcelona, 11 points now above Atletico Madrid. Real Madrid in third. Getafe, fourth still, 1 point ahead of Sevilla, where manager Joaquin Caparrós has revealed that he has chronic leukemia but will stay in the job. Extraordinary, this, because just last season, of course, Sevilla had Eduardo Berizzo, who got diagnosed with prostate cancer and had surgery, and then the club fired him. It was really brutal. Hopefully, Caparrós, who says that, you know, he's called it early enough and that he should be fine to continue doing the job, will enjoy the success that he deserves. Best wishes to him. In the Championship, Natalie, you a big fan of the Championship?
Yeah.
Which's your favourite team?
I'm hoping for Leeds to get promoted.
Oh, yeah?
Yes, because
okay.
I'm a big Bielsa fan, so that's...
Ah, right.
Yes, South Excellent. America.
Well, Leeds lost at Birmingham. Their form has dried up, rather, of late, but not as badly as Middlesbrough's has. Daniel?
Yeah, I think that's seven defeats in a row.
Six
defeats in a row, sorry. And they play Bolton this midweek. It would be fitting if the Tony Pulis era was to, as I saw on Twitter earlier, to lose to a team who can't even afford to pay catering staff at the moment. I can't believe Pulis is still in a job.
Thanks for mentioning Bolton. So what's happened about that? Because there was some threats that they
yeah,
might not
so
be
there,
able to...
there was threats that they wouldn't be able to play the game because of a safety certificate. And then on Saturday morning, there was a threat. The IT system had gone down in the stadium, which I think we can basically mean they hadn't paid the bill. Mm. That then got sorted, so the game did go ahead, but now there's no guarantee that the players will, there's no food at the training ground this week, basically, so players are having to bring their own lunches and stuff. It's a farce, but
but they should be taken to the field against Borough this weekend.
Yeah, I think so, and they lost at home to Ipswich, which is not the right thing to do at the moment. But yeah, Tony Pulis, I can't believe he's still in a job. Their form has, as you say, plummeted.
All right. Norwich, by contrast, have opened up a 7-point gap at the top of the division now with a 4-0 win over QPR. They haven't yet appointed a permanent manager.
No, they reportedly to Tim Sherwood as their number one target, which I think we all want to see.
Definitely. Sheffield United moved in second. Leeds, as we mentioned, lost at Birmingham. Just a week to go, by the way, before Totally Football Live is at Leeds City Varieties Musical, cityvarieties.co.uk for the last few tickets. Aston Villa continue their amazing run under Dean Smith. Six wins in a row now. Away at Sheffield Wednesday this time.
Yeah, two goals in the last minute. It was amusing because Steve Bruce, who is now the Sheffield Wednesday manager,
of course,
was being very vocal in the build-up. Obviously, he'd been sacked by Villa. One of the local media types in Sheffield said it was the football world versus Aston Villa, which is a really odd thing to say about a championship fixture. But yeah, they scored two last-minute goals and won 3-1.
Excellent, Daniel. Well, very shortly, Natalie, we'll be finding out exactly what it is that most confused and befuddled you, bewildered you about this island nation when you first arrived. Mm-hmm. But first, let's get some odds on all the incredible football fixtures heading our way. Producer Ben in conversation with Paddy Power.
Thank you, Jimbo. And as always, at this point of the show, it's time to talk to Lee Price from Paddy Power. Lee, we're going to talk about the Champions League exclusively in this section. Give us some of the markets, please, for Spurs versus City. This is going to be close. I'm interested in the first goal scorer markets and your money back special too, please.
I'm tempted actually just to say guess, Ben, but I think this might be a surprise to some people, at least the home fans. Despite this being in Spurs' new home, the world's greatest stadium trademark, lest we forget, it isn't Harry Kane that's the favourite to open the scoring. It's Manchester City's Sergio Aguero after a week of R&R. He's even to score any time, 7-2 to score first. His understudy, Gabriel Jesus, is next in line, 4-1 to open the scoring, with Kane level with Raheem Sterling after him at 5-1. And you mentioned that money back special. It's a good one, I think. Money back is a free bet if Man City beat Tottenham. That's selected markets only, pre-match singles only, max free bet at tenner, T&Cs apply.
OK, the other Manchester team in action at home to Barcelona. I have a feeling that Messi is going to score, but Barcelona aren't going to win. Can I get some numbers on that, please?
Interesting. Barcelona are odds on to win this one. They're 10-11. Messi is the same price to score. But you'd think home advantage would count for something, although this season they've lost to Juventus and PSG at home United. But to get them the double chance to win or draw this match, it's 8-11. Add in Messi to get on the score sheet, and that makes it 4-1, which is almost as interesting looking as Phil Jones.
And finally, it's my obligatory Liverpool question. They utterly hammered Porto last season, 5-0. That was at the Dragao. It was then 0-0 at Anfield because the job was done. But I have a feeling that Liverpool could score 5 again against this Porto side.
Yeah, you're quite right to shop around, Ben. The value in the match odds isn't there, I'm afraid. Liverpool to win this is 1-4. That's the most one-sided Champions League tie of the round. Despite all the chat around them, they are flying at the moment. Even Mo Salah is scoring again. So this could be a romp. Liverpool to score 5 more goals is 10-1, which does smell like value to me.
You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com. All prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's 18 plus only. BeGambleAware.org. And when the fun stops, stop. So Natalie's about to tell us what what she most found quirky or indeed weird when she arrived here. What's your money on, Daniel?
I'm making Michael,
well, Michael
guess
Cox.
First.
She thinks Michael Cox is the worst.
Well, a previous time I was on with Natalie, she said how much she enjoyed the concept of Christmas jumpers, which I quite liked.
Oh my God, I love it. Yes. I love it. Yes, that was an easy adaptation.
Okay. But is that also because Christmas is hot where you're from? So
yes.
The whole notion of wearing jumpers is exciting in itself.
Absolutely.
It's like for English people wearing like flip-flops.
Absolutely. No, Christmas is so much better in the winter. It doesn't make sense during the summer.
Question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but honestly, what I found more weird, milk on the tea. Milk in the tea. It doesn't, I'm sorry, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. No,
fair enough.
Yep.
You'd agree with that, James?
I would agree. I can't put milk in tea. I mean,
it made it sound like tea had died there. Just faded away from it.
So, right. Okay, well, that's great. And big week ahead of us all. Natalie, where are you going for your... Oh, you don't know yet, do you? You're waiting for Spurs to tell you if you can...
Yes, exactly. Hopefully...
Spurs, if you're listening.
Yes. Please reply our email.
Yeah, okay. If you don't get a ticket to that, what will you do? Pitch up at Man United?
I'll go to the pub, James.
Really?
Yeah, okay. Of course.
Excellent. Super.
Not to watch the football, just to...
Yes. Smashed. Yeah. Daniel?
Old Trafford for me on Wednesday.
Right. Okay. Michael?
I'm at Anfield on Tuesday and the Emirates on Thursday.
Wow. Big games. We will be here on Thursday morning. Raphael Honigstein will be joining us, James Horncastle as well, and also Matt Davis Adams. So that'll be a fascinating listen, hopefully, listener. Do join us for that. For now, many, many thanks to Natalie, Daniel, and Michael, and you, listener. And have a great week till we speak next.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. And don't forget to check out our other football podcasts on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else you get your audio on demand.
Supporting your team can be a beautiful thing, but then come the injuries, the goal droughts and the downright disastrous defeats. That's a little bit like life, really. And here at the Totally Football Show, we believe we should all support each other the way we support our team, through the good days and the bad. And that's why we're continuing to work with CALM, the Campaign Against Living Miserably, a charity dedicated to preventing male suicide. On average, 12 men take their own life every day in the UK. So that's your starting 11 and your manager every single day. And part of the problem is that many of us still feel uncomfortable talking about mental health and suicide, and this can often stop men from opening up and getting support when they need it the most. So if you're worried that someone close to you is having a tough time, check in with them and let them know that CALM is there. Every day from 5pm till midnight, CALM provide a free, confidential and anonymous helpline and web chat for any man who needs support. Visit thecalmzone.net to find out more about CALM.